Blessed to be with you, Kevin Miller in the morning, KIDO Talk Radio. Our great friend Dave Petzo joining us from the Petzo Center. Petzo Financial, so here it is. We're going to test to see if Dave Petzo knows who this headliner is from the Boise Music Festival. You feel pretty confident that you don't know who it is.
I usually don't.
Right.
No.
Right. You're so out of touch.
I'm still in the 80s.
All right. Well, this person is one of the biggest global stars ever. I believe he was born or he was out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
A Jewish American, I believe. A guy that really has redefined the music genre, has international deals with Coca-Cola and all those other things going on. Any clue who it is?
Not for me. I don't.
Mm-mm. All right.
But I might know him now.
Pitbull. You ever heard of Pitbull?
No.
He's a big star. He has that song where they go, hey, hey, hey. You've done that before.
Hey.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Pitbull is...
I thought most songs go something like that.
I don't know. But anyway, you're the hip one of us here. So Pitbull will, in fact, headline the 10th anniversary of the Boise Music Festival. I believe that 10 years.
That's amazing.
Some of the people that we've had, Bret Michaels. You remember Bret Michaels?
I do.
The 80s. Okay.
Yep.
Going back to the 80s. Joan Jett.
Yeah, I definitely remember Joan Jett.
MC Hammer.
She was everybody. All
you're
the
back.
Guys
you're
loved
still, you're still,
Joan
you're,
Jett.
Wait a minute. You're still with Joan Jett. We've moved
still,
on. With
are
MC
we on
Hammer.
The next one? Sorry.
Right. Nelly.
Nelly.
LL Cool J.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm the type of guy, right? So we have LL Cool J. We've had all these people here. We've had Train. You ever heard of Train?
Certainly.
Right.
Certainly. Went to their concert here last year.
All yeah. Before that concert, though.
I know. No, you had them first.
The corporate giants had them. I'm just a pawn. I'm just, as Brad Little tells me, you're a soap salesman, Kevin Miller.
Okay.
So back to the Boise Music Festival. Ticket prices go up Thursday, so you can still buy your tickets at an affordable price, or you can win them around the Treasure Valley. We'll have details at KIDOTalkRadio.com. But big Pitbull coming here. Now, I advocated for Meatloaf, but I've always been ignored by the command power here.
I would too. That would be a great concert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paradise
by
the Dashboard.
I know, but I don't know if he can hit those notes anymore. He was quite a singer. He was quite something.
I saw him in Eagle a few years ago, and it was very disappointing. It was very hot, and
I heard that. Yes,
yeah.
I did not go to that concert, but I had a client that told me it was not. It was disappointing.
It was. Anyway, let's move on to Money That Matters. Dave Petzo joining us here. A big spread in one of the local papers talking about are the anti-marijuana ads true? You mean the pro-drug-free ads?
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been advocating investing in Cannabis Incorporated. In your world, when you go to Midtown Manhattan, when you're going to the hanging out with these things, are people actually thinking about investing in cannabis stocks?
Yes.
Now, how can they do that based on the fact that those people can't go to the banks?
No, it's true. Because what they're talking about right now, Kevin, are Canadian cannabis stocks.
Okay.
That's what, because it is legal, and that's what people are buying are those companies. Excuse me. And that's, in fact, what companies like Constellation Brands, which has the distribution, right? And they're talking, and they're the ones that are making big investments into these cannabis companies so that you and I can drink a Coca-Cola or a little fruity cocktail of some kind and have a little buzz with it, too.
A buzz with cannabis. That's got to be tough, though, to regulate when you think about just the idea of what is in stuff. We've had people, little kids taking brownies to school, and all of a sudden people get sick because they had the pot in them, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And how outraged people were. Now it just seems to be, it's a completely different world in the last 10 years, isn't it? It's just astounding.
Sure.
Ever since Colorado, I think, was the first one, right?
Ever since Obama. Haven't gotten over Obama.
That's a fair point.
That's me, though.
Well, I don't know that this country ever will, frankly, Kevin.
Sure.
I shouldn't laugh about it. It's really quite true. But it's a lot of areas are in a tough situation because of that. But, yeah, it's covered in the Wall Street Journal very extensively because it is a big area. It's a big area of investment for businesses. And also it's a very hot area. And you know how media is of all kinds. Even serious media like the Wall Street Journal is still going to be following what the social trends are. And the social trends are I can't go a week without being asked a couple times about pot stocks.
Here's a fascinating thing. The state is debating whether or not to legalize hemp. hemp was legalized because of the farm bill. Lars Larson last week was telling us that in Oregon, hemp, and I he said marijuana, and I'll just assume hemp, they suck up a ton of water. Just is a dreadful plant. So all these folks that are saying, look, I'm going to go in the ag business, I'm going to be a farmer, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
That stuff just sucks up all your water.
Yeah, there's a lot. I don't know, Kevin. Obviously, I'm not in agriculture, and I don't know anything about hemp. I just know people will oftentimes try to ignore, as we did with the ethanol,
right.
that how much downside there is. It takes more carbon to produce it than to get it out. Plus, then we throw in a lot of wasted capital on top of it. It's one of the dumbest ideas we've ever had, and yet people will pursue and pursue and pursue. So I know that people think hemp is great and groovy, and I'm sure it is, but we have to be careful of those kinds of things, Kevin. And I think you really nailed it right out of the chute with it when people are saying it's going to make $60,000 or $80,000 an acre.
Right.
It reminds me of the old days when Rush Limbaugh would come out and go, if there's really that many homeless people,
right,
it would take up the entire state of California or something like that. It was like, you can't just make up these numbers, folks. I mean, that doesn't help the story when you start exaggerating the facts. It's okay if we have hemp, but based on the right facts, not, you know, let's have an honest argument, is I guess what I'm agreeing with you on.
I don't know if there'll ever be an honest argument. KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM, 5 at EM. Dave Petzo with us. Let's go on to something that you do a lot. You're an international traveler. You're a man of the world. If you're going to exotic locations like, oh, I don't know, Reno or Chicago or places that most of us just
read
about.
Seattle, where I just,
right, Seattle.
Pray to get out quickly.
Right, most of us just dream of going to these exotic locations. What do you make of the Boeing situation with the 737 MAX?
Kevin, these are normally, it's an interesting question. It's normally a very, very good buying opportunity. And you hate to be talking about, you know, tragedy as a buying opportunity.
Sure.
But when something goes down dramatically, like Boeing stock did, and rightfully, you know, we don't know, you know, wait till the dust settles, let's find out what's going on. It has historically been a very, very good time to buy. And I mean even Boeing's history or other aerospace companies. These things are amazing, and they're difficult to keep in the air, if you will. They're not difficult in the sense that thousands of flights have been flown with these things. Thousands. And so it's not like we have two out of, 1,000 flights went down. So something's weird, and it should be a fix they can make. We don't know yet, and certainly unless there's some kind of conspiracy, and Boeing's never been involved in anything like that at all. They've always done the right thing, if you will, all the way through. And that is to just stay on top of it and make sure that they fix whatever problem there is. These are very complicated aircraft. There might be something wrong here. There probably is. And so they'll go in and fix it, and they'll continue on. So normally that's the case, Kevin, and it's really not a question of being an ambulance chasing a lawyer here. These are just usually buying opportunities.
You know, on the other hand, though, you take a look at Boeing, and by the way, Mr. Boeing, Bill Boeing, used to own this radio station.
Is that right?
Yeah, Bill Boeing, they bought a few radio stations, and this was one of them, part of the Boeing family. And maybe one day Mr. Boeing will come back and buy us again. Who knows? But there's a question of training. And apparently, this software upgrade, and Boeing lobbied heavily, the FAA and others, to say that this was not a new airplane. Because if it was a new airplane, then you'd have to do new training.
Mm.
And apparently, it was some type of software thing that you could kill. Again, according to published reports, which you love so much, there was a switch that you could kill the software. Because apparently, the machine senses something, and if it's in a stall, it nosedives the plane to try and gain momentum to come up. But sometimes they get the false readings.
Right.
That's initially what they're talking about. So we build upon that. You take a look at these autonomous vehicles all the time that we're.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, we're years away, or are we?
Precisely. I think that I think it's a very, really incredible point when you're talking about autonomous vehicles. We don't have any kind of a concern. We have concern, but not the kind of concern, because if you're talking about an automobile, you're talking about a couple of people typically, right? You're not talking about 160 people dying at one time. And so it is a much bigger tragedy to have an airline go down. But we have had these kind of things happen with a Tesla not seeing what's in front of it and, sure. You know, and just running into a truck and things like that. These things happen. And we don't know why, but we are getting closer, Kevin, to those. But it reminds me even of a little thing, and that is in the car. Your cruise control shuts down, right? So if it sees something in front, it pulls, it stops the car.
Well, that's the new cars.
That's the new cars, right?
Right.
Newer, okay, sure. 2015, whatever it is, something like that.
That's brand new, man. That's like,
that's pretty new for me, as you know. And so anyway, so those things, and then all of a sudden it's broken, right? It's just, and then it doesn't work. It's an interesting, there are problems out there with all of them, because technology can have the littlest of glitches.
Now we've got Dave Petzl into the trap that we have been waiting for at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. So isn't Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez right when she says the corporate people are running things because Boeing pressured these governments not to reclassify this plane? Don't corporations have too much power? Dave Petzl, lover of the corporations.
Well, I'm going to say yes and no. Okay, I do not like. I'm not going to agree with very much that Elizabeth Warren says, but I do think that the large tech companies have way too much power.
Well, she says break them up.
I do, and I agree with her. If they're not going to
wait a minute. Hold on. Let's mark this right now.
Yep.
Dave Petzl is endorsing Elizabeth Warren.
That's
fake
really
news. Hashtag fake
yes,
news.
That's good. She's a nut, but in this case, I think that she is. She's right, Kevin. These folks are acting very irresponsibly. Whether it's Google selling us, but selling all of our data, but Facebook is particularly in your face about it. They've been caught red-handed many, many, many times, and all they do is, oh, we're working hard to be better, and they're not. They're not, obviously not. They don't care, and there's been no downside to it. So if we are not going to act responsibly as corporations, with very important ongoing data, then I think they need to be broken up. And I do think that there are some problems coming for the big tech companies. But as far as Boeing and that, we'll have to wait for the conspiracy theory, AOC. And
coming up next, though, I want you to explain to us, please, how that would look, how you could break up the big tech companies. More with Dave Petzl, host of Money Matters, Petzl Center, Petzl Financial, right here. Kevin Miller, don't go anywhere, KIDO Talk Radio. Dave Petzl joining us, the Petzl Center, Petzl Financial. So let's go back to breaking up the big tech companies. Really, has the government really done anything as far as antitrust in forever?
No. I mean, the biggest, of course, and certainly in my life, AT&T was a big deal, but Microsoft was too. We just don't see it the same way you do with AT&T. But Microsoft was finally as well. And Microsoft's viable after the breakup, and so will these companies be. But the point that I'm making here is that if you are stifling ongoing competition, and I feel like they are, but the most important, if you will, impression, I would say, the easiest part is to say, look, Amazon is out there destroying so many businesses, good or bad. I'm just saying that it's great for the consumer, right? But they're out there destroying so many businesses and losing money doing it. But they're making so much money with this other business, the cloud business that they have, that they can support the destruction of all these other businesses. That's a classic antitrust. That would be the defining thing. You cannot undercut, undersell, and not make a profit in places or lose money just in order to destroy business. That is a classic case of antitrust. But so I think that's where you would pick that.
I'm with you. But is the government strong enough to take these folks down? You and I were talking about this podcast, Business Wars.
Yeah.
I'm doing this thing called IBM versus Univac. Univac was the first computer.
Mm-hmm.
Probably,
yeah.
You remember Univac?
You've
read about it.
I've read about it, basically.
Univac was by Rand Remington, Remington Rand, and they had it. And then IBM was, in fact, threatened by the government with a Sherman antitrust suit. They settled it out of court. IBM continued to roll. But that's when these people feared the government.
Yeah.
So I don't think Bezos, I don't think Zuckerberg,
no.
I don't think whoever runs Google fears the government. We could have these entities that are more powerful than the United States government. Now, to me, I'm a brick-and-mortar guy. I'm an analog guy. I'm going to go with the government on this, but they might just believe that they have more. Actually, you might have a defendant that has unlimited resources.
Correct.
More so than the United
than
States
the
government.
That's correct. And therefore better people. Right? I mean, look, I don't want to put down government prosecutors, but there, and because there are a number of them that are just so good because they are so passionate about what they do, but they are not making the kind of money they would make out in the private world, which usually ends up with the best attorneys, right? And so you're trying to make a case with less talented people, typically, if you are
fighting
somebody.
I think Robert Mueller is pretty talented.
Yeah, he's talented. Okay, never mind.
What were you going to say?
Nothing. I'm not. We're going to wait and see the report.
Sure.
The unbiased, clean-cut report.
Sure. So back to this. I mean, we could have the government facing an enemy with unlimited resources and the ability to influence everybody because they own our phones.
That's correct. That's right. And the news flow. That's right. They do. Kevin, you have a very good point, and I think that that's an interesting point when you're talking about somebody that has $100 billion. That's just, I mean, that's what Bezos has, right? I mean, it's completely unlimited. That doesn't even include the companies. These companies are so rich. They've got tens of billions of dollars sitting in cash. And so when you're talking about that kind of wealth, you're quite right, and you're talking about being able to hire the best talent to go out there and influence it. The government needs to get on it and be very clear if these companies are not going to behave, and they aren't. It is in your face, and when you say that they're really not afraid of the government, I think they're acting very arrogantly and in the face of government, in the face of all of us.
So a recession is coming and maybe a bear market too? This is from Bloomberg, just breaking 3 hours ago on KIDO Talk Radio. Your reaction, Dave Pezzo.
Recession number 13 coming. I mean, it's announced all the time, Kevin, all of the time. And one of the times, just like a stopwatch, somebody is going to be right.
Right.
And they will be just the heroes of the planet. But what we never do is we never seem to hold people accountable for calling recession after recession after recession after recession. Oh, Dave Pezzo got it right. No, he didn't, because he called it 14 times before it actually happened. That isn't right. That's as wrong as you could possibly be. But it still is the way that the Wall Street reports. They make stuff up. Bloomberg can't wait for a recession. They hate Trump so bad. But it's not just Bloomberg. It's Yahoo Finance. It's all of them. It's CBS's Market Watch. It's anti-Trump everything all the time. And so when we have an economy that they can't explain without bigger government spending, that the entrepreneur is going hog wild and spending money and expanding and doing things, and the economy is actually responding to the government getting out of the way, reducing taxes, things like that, they don't know what to do with themselves except for call for the next recession.
Speaking of financial outlooks, couple big events over the weekend. You had the Big Sky basketball tournament in, the first of a three-year deal. Many people in downtown Boise. You've got the controversy over the stadium and the library. You have a local group, and I think this is really wonderful, wanting the right, the ability to vote, to spend taxpayer money on stadiums, on libraries, and the legislature debating an issue when it comes to urban renewal funds as well, making it more of a, you know, a referendum as opposed to letting these big money elected officials decide. Your thoughts on just the state of building things like a downtown stadium. Well, whether we like that or not, economically, does it make sense?
Yeah, I don't think it makes sense, or we would be doing it. Private enterprise would do it. That's always the indicator. If there's a need for something and enough that it's going to be generating capital, then people will do it. Now, there are circumstances, I have to say this, that where you have a convention center that doesn't necessarily make all of its money there, but they have tax revenue for increasing occupancy in the hotels and things like that. I absolutely think you should, you know, have that as a conglomerate slash of income that you're generating. And so I do get that there are circumstances where you spend without an individual saying, all on its own, this is going to be profitable if we include the economic impact of the whole area. But when we do that, we also open up that Pandora's box of government making up numbers of what the economic impact is just because they want a new stadium, when it really isn't that big of an impact.
You know, speaking of downtown Boise, you know, they're building another hotel. They've got the Hilton Garden.
Yep.
They've got the Residence Inn. They've got Hotel 43. They've got the other new one with the fancy restaurant. They've got all these hotels. Now, you and I would go back and opine that, yes, the convention center needs to be expanded. We're such a hidden gem. But what do the do you know how that you stay at hotels, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're an Airbnb guy, too, sometimes.
I've done that.
You're a shrewd operator, so I got to keep up with you. But what do these hotels do? Let's say they have 500 rooms. There's no way there's 500 people staying in these rooms, so there's no way they're occupied all the time.
Not all the
economically,
time.
Back to the point about the state, does that make sense to have another hotel here? Obviously, these people aren't dummies.
No.
They see something happening here.
Correct.
That I don't see on the horizon. Do you?
Yeah, I don't see it, but again, this goes back to when years ago when they were just putting in the Village, for example.
Yes.
You and I talked about that, mm-hmm. and it looked like this. Are you kidding me? Build it and they'll come. That's what it looked like.
But that makes sense because it was Eagle Road, and that was
it did. But at the time we had the same. Like, where are all these people going to spend all this money? And the answer is the people are not putting up multi-million-dollar buildings without the demographics, without the studies. So I have to trust that if real dollars are being put there, if this is a city, then it's probably just stupid money because it's not their money. They don't have to turn a profit. They don't have to justify anything. And so what I'm saying is when you are talking about making a profit like private business does, they do it carefully, and the numbers are there, Kevin. I would trust that the numbers are there.
Right. And speaking of the Village, and they had said this to me a few years ago, they're expanding that thing.
Yes, exactly.
I believe they're going to take over the other side of the street.
Oh, that big old open field.
Right.
Are they? Good.
Well, they're expanding. I don't know if that's the part. They told me they were going to do that a few years ago, but I couldn't see why they wouldn't. And that rivals just about anything you'd see in any parts of the country.
Absolutely. And, of course, that should make that intersection even more fun.
Well, and finally, and I'm going to hold you over on this one, the state announced that Chinden will begin. They'll begin expanding Chinden Road by 2020. They'll start on it, which they wanted to go four lanes out to West Ada, Eastern Canyon County, if you will. But it's impossible to keep up. We are in trouble here with the roads.
Every fast growing place is
for people right now. It is a pain in the butt.
Yes,
listening to us right now,
yes.
And it's not because of us. It's because they're stuck in traffic, slow go in front, tailgate Timmy behind.
Yep. Yeah, and much more aggressive driving, as you've pointed
right.
out many times. Kevin, you're right. It's very different, and as you and I've said many times, you know, my Boise is gone, and it is gone, okay? But at the same time, it is a problem that every city that's growing has, and the alternative is terrible. It's Weezer. You're living in Weezer and watching it decay. You can certainly have cheap housing. You can certainly have no infrastructure problems because nobody's doing anything, and all the kids are leaving. So, again, those are two extremes right here in the valley. But it is something that we do have to jump upon, and I wish politicians would think ahead. They don't. They do not. They think ahead to the next election, and there has always been an ongoing problem with anything is what are we going to do about the infrastructure 20 years from now? We don't make plans.
Dave Petzo always making plans.
Trying to.
Saturday Money Matters, that you going to be here?
Actually, Jennifer Stone is going to be doing the program with Tom Brown and Erica Much.
Better watch out. The big three coming for you.
That's right.
Dave Petzo, Petzo Center, Petzo Financial. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Kevin.
You're listening to KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM, 580 AM.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo on this wonderful Saturday morning.
Good morning.
It's amazing when you drive through downtown right now, right? Because it's so vibrant and upbeat with Treefort and all these different activities. And we know the area is growing like crazy and people feel good and bad about that. But it's super fun to see everything going on.
Mm-hmm. It is. It really has a different feel to it when you go downtown in the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Our building, Petzo Financial, used to be off of Park Center in the Mallard area. So it was kind of back in this little area that not a lot of traffic, not a lot of people went through there. But when we moved downtown, now we actually get to be involved in the actual downtown lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So we're walking around now, or when we got in today, we had a little more traffic than usual. The roads were closed. Tom made the right turn. I made the wrong one and had to go around the block. But if you're out and about, I think it'd be really worth your time to head downtown and check out everything going on.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah. So our background a little bit. I've worked with Dave now, and I can finally say, instead of almost 25 years, we've worked together for 25 years. I'm a certified financial planner. Tom Brown has been with us
for almost 15 years.
All right. I should be able to remember there's like a 10-year difference, right?
We could just use that.
There you go. So we both are, like we said, certified financial planners. Erica Much is joining us, as Dave mentioned, in the recording that they played first, but she won't be here until around 9. So we thought we would have her come in and share some of her ideas on what we're going to talk about today, some of the misconceptions or myths of investing. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, you know, the market, of course, had a little bit of a rough week, but we want to focus on the positives because we were talking with Ray a little bit at the break, and he's right. Anytime the market is down, it plunges. Anytime it's up, it's up. So it's interesting that too, but the market was down last week. We are aware of that, but year to date, we're still up very nicely.
Oh yeah. It's been a great recovery this year from the last quarter of last year and just what we thought might happen.
Right. So why is it though that we get overly focused on the negativity? We're reading a book right now. Pretty much, I think everyone in the office got the same book. And it's talking about what is called as factfulness. And it's the 10 reasons we're wrong about the world and why things are actually better than we think they are. The one we are really focused on right now is poverty. Because everyone, you would think, the world, people aren't living as well, there's more hunger. And actually, in the last 20 years, the number of people living in poverty or extreme poverty has dropped by half.
Yeah, and you don't get that from the media. It seems that everybody is on the verge of dire straits, and it just isn't true anymore.
It's not. And the interesting thing about that is the book that we're reading, it's a Swedish doctor that wrote it with his son and daughter-in-law, and they created a foundation called GAP, and I'm going to make sure I get this right, GAP Minder. So it's talking about the different gaps and different types of poverty or wealth, food, vaccinations, all these different things. So it's quite interesting, but this is the one we want to focus on because it kind of ties into everything else. But only 10% of the people answered that correctly, that poverty has gotten better.
Right. Because I think we still believe what the media is telling us, which is, you know, things are bad and getting worse. And it just, how could things get any better given our current situation? And we're just not looking under the hood and finding out that that isn't really true.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is when I say around 10, it's less than 10. Right. Of the U.S. population, it was 5.
Right.
And globally, it was 7 that answered the question correctly that poverty has been cut in half over the last 20 years.
Yeah. You listen to some people that are now in Congress, you would believe that half of our nation is in poverty and just struggling and it's getting worse and worse every day.
Mm-hmm. And we tend to, it's funny, we spend a lot of time maybe we would say overthinking and talking mm-hmm. about ideas because we don't want to be pigeonholed into thinking like everyone else. So we'll always question the facts and say, well, what makes people not save then? Is it because everybody is so pessimistic? Because they asked 10 questions in this book and to see how people would answer. Well, it's a book about optimism, obviously, so you know you should answer it correctly. But even when you know this, you still get a lot of the answers wrong because you naturally go to the negative.
Right.
So is that why people won't save? Because the saving rates are really not good.
Right. There's a whole bunch of, you know, we've talked about that a lot. Why is it that it is so hard for people to save, or why is it so hard for people continue to save? Mm-hmm. You know, you'll get somebody that, hey, I got a big tax refund. We'll put $1,000 into savings. But, you know, 3 weeks from now, they've already spent it somewhere else. And they say, you know, so it's that thought process of paying yourself first and saving. It seems like the discipline of that is so hard for people to grasp nowadays versus, you know, when our parents or grandparents were alive, where it was more of a natural thing. Because like we were talking about before the radio program, I think that it's the advent of credit cards that really led to a lot of the later generations, the last couple of generations anyway, where you buy and then you pay mm-hmm. for something. You don't save and then you buy. Because it's instantaneous. It's that instantaneous gratification. You can, so why not buy? And mm-hmm. and then you can figure out how to pay for it. And, you know, it might be 15% interest, but we got it now.
Right. And our kids come to us because we both have adult, I know it's hard to believe, but they are 18. So we're going to call them adult children. And I have an older one that's 22. And all of them came to me and said, should we get a credit card? We do need to start building our credit, right? And isn't that interesting that they're taught?
Mm-hmm.
The first apartment my older daughter rented, she went and was talking with a lady. We were with her. And actually, the leasing agent said to her, you should go get a credit card. And I was blown away that they would suggest this. So everything pushes them to take debt on.
Right. And it is kind of now an ingrained part of our culture mm-hmm. to think that way, because you'll have people that are successful, you know, are good savers and so forth, and they'll still say, well, what if I cancel that credit card? It's really going to hurt my credit. I go, you have $1 million saved. Why do you care what your, you know, what happens to your credit? But it's just this institution we built for ourselves that thinks that is a criteria of being successful, is that you have to go have a good credit score.
Which credit score is just basically that you borrow and pay it back.
Right. And you have a good record of making payments.
Back on time.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's utility bills will fall into that as well. Yep. So there's a lot of things that aren't even credit cards that come into good credit scores. So I don't know why it's such a thing to have to get that first credit card to build your credit. Yep.
It's just because I believe, because credit card companies and banks that issue most of them are just brilliant marketers. Mm-hmm. And they've really ingrained in our psyche that's the important thing you got to do.
And a lot of people will say, but why won't they take that next step to invest? That's what we're going to talk about a lot today, and maybe try to help peel that onion back, I guess, and look at the different reasons that maybe they don't want to take the chance of putting money into this thing that doesn't exist in a lot of people's mind. Because when I was growing up, my parents always said you need to save some money, but they never talked about investing. They always said, you know, your car's going to break, or you're going to have expenses that you need to cover. So you need to set some money aside for that. Tom and I were talking about that too, because we grew up similarly, but he mm-hmm. grew up on a farm and his parents produced a lot of what they ate. So he right. never felt like he was lacking of anything.
But I think the most my father ever made was a little over $20,000. As I remember.
Mm-hmm. And in today's dollars, can you imagine?
Oh, yeah.
They had to produce. They had to have a garden and meat and different things. Hunting. You did a lot of hunting and stuff too.
And that was just part of your lifestyle. Not a bad lifestyle, but it certainly was not one where you said, hey, how much is in your, how much are we putting in the 401k? That didn't come up too often.
No. But before we get into the myths, I promised Tom he could have a few minutes to hit on, because it is tax season. He's doing a lot of tax returns right now, so we pulled him away from that for a couple hours today. But there were a couple tips that you wanted mm-hmm. to make sure to get out there that people aren't doing.
Right. And more or less than tips, than more misconceptions that I think people are getting right now. And it's on the itemized deductions, because they have raised the standard deduction so much, people aren't able to itemize. It just isn't effective for them. But now we're getting it. People are thinking that charitable donations are not deductible. Are not deductible anymore. It's basically they've been told, hey, they aren't even, you don't even, can't even deduct them. And that's not true. They're still as deductible as they were. It's just that you have to have quite a bit more of them to do you any good. So that thought that, oh, I don't even need to keep track because I don't, because they're not deductible isn't true. And so there's a couple things that you need if you're in Idaho, if you're a resident, is, you know, the credits that you can get for giving to like the Idaho Youth Ranch, the ARC, Women Children's Alliance. There's quite a list of them. That's still, you can still get that credit whether you itemize or not. So I know it isn't very much for married filing jointly. It's $200. For single, it's $100. But you can still get that for making those donations. So even though you might not be itemizing, don't just throw those to the side and say, hey, we can't even use those anymore. You can. And still the education donations that you make to schools, museums, libraries, Idaho Public Television, all are still a credit on the Idaho. So keep track of that. And insurance premiums. This is a big one, especially for retirees. If you're paying health insurance premiums or long-term care insurance premiums, you still get a deduction for that on your Idaho tax return. So even if you're not itemizing where you would generally put those, don't forget that you can still get a deduction for those on the Idaho. So I think a lot of people are not even thinking about it anymore because they've been told, well, I'm not going to itemize. What's the use? Well, you still can save quite a bit by making sure that you're still entering those on the tax return, even if you're not itemizing.
All right. And another thing to remember, too, if you're over 70 and a half, you can directly gift your required distribution to charities. It's quite a nice thing. So if you have a financial advisor, call and talk to him about it. But we do need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into the myths of investing. Give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning, and this is Money Matters. Thank you for joining us. And if you have questions, we love phone calls. They're one of our favorite parts of getting up and doing this. So please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Before we get back into what we were talking about on the myths of investing, we are going to go right to the phones. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Jennifer and Tom. How's it going?
Hi,
good.
Jim.
Good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Long time no talk to.
I know. Every couple months we get to say hi to you.
Yeah. You were mentioning the growth around here and the happenings downtown.
Uh-huh.
I'll put in a plug for bicycle. I bike whenever I can, and luckily I'm in good health and I've got the time to do it. But there are so many benefits to bicycling. So bicycling is a good thing to do. And I'll put in a plug for you all that all the money you save by not using your automobile, you can invest.
There you go. That's a good one. Yeah, we actually have, now that we're downtown, a lot of our clients ride their bikes.
Yeah, I had two clients come in. One rode a moped and one rode a bike yesterday.
Yeah, so
you
we
know
agree.
What amazing? I have no idea about those scooters, but apparently they're working. You know, they say they're going to go up to like 1,500 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I see more of them parked than being used, but apparently they're being used. One of these days, I'd like to find out exactly how much they cost, roughly, to use those things.
Oh, right. You mean to rent them? Because we can
Well, you use some sort of an app, which I ain't got no app, so I'm appless. So
yeah.
Apparently with your phone or whatever, you know, you jump on a scooter and fire the thing up and then go from point A to point B and then leave the scooter.
Yep. Right.
It's all. I've actually done it. I don't recall exactly what the rates are, but it's so much to basically turn it on, and then you're charged per minute of use.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder. I guess it's beneficial. But even see, we in today's society will do anything to avoid getting exercise.
You're right.
I mean, you know, even the scooter uses a motor.
Yeah, right. It's true.
So you know, I mean, you could. I mean. I admire those skateboarders. At least they're using one foot to propel them.
Yeah, they're going to have a really strong calf on one leg, right?
Yeah. So maybe they're ambidextrous in their calf muscles.
There you go. You know, it's interesting. I heard a statistic on the scooters, though, that their life is only like 45 days because they're used so much. And they're a couple hundred dollars a piece. So you worry a lot about the waste, right? Because
I heard that they were required, Beater or whatever, was requiring them to round those things up nightly. And, you know, somebody takes care of them and runs them down every night. So that's amazing, I guess.
Yeah, my younger daughter and her boyfriend did that for a while. They would drive around town and pick them up and take them home and charge them. And then they had to put them back out before 5 in the morning or something.
I guess they have some little gadget so they'll know where they are and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep, but it was quite a game for a while. People would hide them. So that, and you could, it was quite interesting, but they don't do it anymore, but it was fun for a while.
I wonder if they have any thefts or what. But anyway, there's going to be a third company coming in, so apparently it's a going concern kind of a thing.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I don't see them being driven around as much.
Nope.
But they must
be. Anyway, I'm doing well and investing and ups and downs, and I've even got Boeing stock, but... see, that's the problem with too much technology. The pilots don't even know how to override the damn thing these days.
Right.
So, I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. I prefer to have a human being pilot in the cockpit myself.
Yeah, not just pushing the button every once in a while, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we're getting too ahead of us and all that stuff, but, you know, and I tell Dave, any time that Apple has a bad day is a good day for me. So anyway, we'll take care of you all.
Yeah,
all right,
care,
Jim, you too.
Talk to you later.
All right, very good. All right, so we're coming up here that we're going to have to take our last break at the top of the hour, but Tom and I always enjoy sharing some of our favorite quotes with you. So we do have a couple of those that we hope make you just stop, you know, just think for a bit. One of them's by Warren Buffett. One of my favorites. He says, I will tell you how to become rich. Close the doors. Be fearful when others are greedy. Be greedy when others are fearful. All right, we'll be back after the top of the hour. Please give us a call, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and Erica Mutch has joined us this morning, and we are talking about the myths of investing, or that's what we're going to be talking about. We haven't quite gotten there yet because there's some other interesting things that we always like to share first. But one of the things that we always want to talk about is how to get people started and how small dollars mean so much. If you have any questions, please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. So we ran across a chart, and some of the numbers always are disturbing, I guess, to us. It talks about median net worth, which the median is just right in the middle. The averages sometimes tend to be skewed because higher net worth people can pull the averages up. And I know on the other side, lowers can pull it down, but the median is a very good number to look at. And when you look at a 40-year-old having a net worth of just a little over $25,000, doesn't include their home. When you add the equity in their home, it's about $85,000. What we're concerned about is how do we pull those numbers up? And why aren't more people setting aside money when everywhere you look, it's screaming at you that there is a retirement issue, that people aren't saving enough, that the younger generations, how are they going to retire? What are we going to do about Social Security now that if it's becoming one of the main sources of income in retirement? It's a, I feel, a very big issue.
Mm-hmm.
We are fortunate enough that we get to see people once they've kind of gotten to the point that they're doing better, but we also see people on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Erica and Tom met with a couple that had over $250,000 in student loan debt.
Right.
That's not unusual.
Yeah.
But what scares us is that doesn't feel risky to people. The market is risky. They don't want to invest, but having over $250,000 in student loan debt is shruggable.
Right. Plus there was credit card debt, plus, you know, other types of debt. And it was just, I think they were so deep that it just didn't seem... It's almost like surreal, you know, like you can't really contemplate it. You know, when you have $300,000 in debt and you're just like, it's so much. Where do you start?
Then they wanted to look into, you know, buying a house too. So just accumulating even more debt, it wasn't concerning to them at all.
And having a emergency fund wasn't even a thought.
Right.
No.
It wasn't a consideration. And the thing is though, they did, we really want to start saving in the retirement plan. And you got a lot of other things
to worry about
ahead
first.
Of you on the border. It's, you know, you're basically bankrupt right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what if something goes wrong? Just one, because student loans mm-hmm. don't go away if you file
right, you
for
can't
bankruptcy.
Bankrupt. Right. Yep, can't bankrupt out of student loans.
Right. So one of the reasons we really, really wanted Erica to join us too is Tom and I are old people. We've been doing this for a while. Erica is one of the younger people on our team. She's definitely an unusual millennial, but she does fit into that category. She's always been a saver. She's always felt it's important to have an emergency fund mm-hmm. and to do those things, even before she got into this industry. But what we asked her to do was kind of fill out some people she knew that's still in that same age group, the millennial age group, and find out why some of them are really good savers, but they won't invest.
Mm-hmm. That's actually pretty funny. My younger brother, so we were raised exactly the same way. Our parents didn't really talk to us about investing, but we're very prudent with their money. But we were never told, okay, you should put money away, you should invest it. And so like you mentioned, I have been saving for a long time. I always had a bucket of cash somewhere, whether it was at the bank or, you know, in my mattress, honestly, when I was younger. And my brother kind of has a different mindset completely, which is interesting because there was no difference in the background. I talked to him just the other day and just kind of wanted to get an idea and really say, why aren't you investing? He's sitting on cash, but not investing it in his 401k, which he does have available to him. So I'm like, why are you doing this? He said he really likes to see his money. He wants it to be there. He wants to see it. He wants to be able to get to it if he needs it. And it's in the bank, but it's earning next to nothing. And he doesn't understand the stock market. He doesn't understand what bonds are or anything, which is pretty typical of that age group. But he just never had the desire to want to learn about it either. So he just wants to get cash. To his money, build yeah. up cash, and is not investing.
So that's why we talk about that a lot too, right? How do we get them to take that and just even put a toe in? Mm-hmm. So some of the myths that we come up with, and we've seen a lot too, is it, do they feel like it's hard to get started? Do they not know enough to go in and say, you know, I'm going to call Tom. Tom's good because he works with a lot of people through Love Inc. and different groups that are beginning taxpayers, mm-hmm. I guess, to mm-hmm. say. So he encourages them to look at investing too when he talks with them a little bit and says, hey, if you've got someone you're working with, just bring this up to them, trying mm-hmm. to educate them a bit more. But do you feel, Tom, that it's harder for people to get started and that's why they don't do it?
I think it is. I think it's getting over that hump of going from talking about doing something than to walking about doing something. Mm-hmm. I just made that up.
That's good. I like it.
Good. but it's that, you know, like we always say, you know, let's get the paperwork. If you're ready to go, let's get the paperwork done. Right. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, then it's easy to, well, let's procrastinate. And I think that we have this fear of, okay, we're really doing it now. We're going to do this and getting through that first thing. A few people come in, they're really excited to get started. And I think it's that whole thing is that we have this whole dynamic of, I'm really excited. I want to start investing. I took, you know, like we were talking to those young people, they took the mm-hmm. Dave Ramsey course in high school. I learned about this. I want to get started. I want to do all this stuff. And then we have these other people, even older people. And, oh, I don't know. I don't have enough. I'm going to wait until I have more, you know, I'll wait until we get a house and then we'll start. I'll wait until I pay off, you know, the car and mm-hmm. then we'll get started. And I think people are just really averse. Some people are just really averse of getting that, like you're saying, that toe in the water, that mm-hmm. making that step out there because it seems like it's such a big deal. And when you say, oh, hey, and that's how it goes.
Not that bad. I have a good friend who is a stay-at-home mom, and she has 3 young kids. And she was talking to me about investing the other day. And she says, well, I don't even think we have enough to get started. Well, that's going back to exactly what you're saying. You don't need, you know, $100,000 to jump in. You can start with as little as $50 a month, $25 a month, whatever you want it to be. Just start putting away. It's so important. And, you know, that's a hard spot to be in too, raising 3 young kids. I mean, she is married, but she's a stay-at-home, so they're on a sole income. Right. But she was like, how do I start? How do I even get started? Right. And it was a good conversation. I know Dave kind of brings up the coffee illustration quite a bit, but you don't need a lot to get started. The big thing is if you are spending $5 a day on coffee, it might not seem that much, but if you go to Dutch Bros, those drinks are expensive.
They are.
So it adds up fast. So if you were to take those $5 a day, whether it be on coffee or video games or whatever your fun kind of not need but more of a want is, if you were to take that money and invest it every month, $150 a month, over a 40-year time frame, which, you know, working years, that's kind of similar. And to invest that money, $72,000 you would spend on coffee. First of all, do you really like coffee that much? Right. And if you were to invest it in the S&P, how much do you think you would end up with? I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing.
It really is.
It's $1.2 million. Mm-hmm. That's insane. So yeah. You don't need that $100,000. You don't need $1 million to get started. You can start with $5 a day.
And that's the part that we're trying to do. As you hear, when we go through a Petso Financial, our main goal is to educate people. We've been educating people for 35 years. Education is so important because you don't realize how much the compounding of money is. I remember I read a book by Warren Buffett ages ago, and he was talking about his wife wanting a new couch. And in his mind, the only thing he could think about is, in future dollars, how much is this couch going to cost me? So you can't always think like that either. But what we're saying is these small differences are huge in the long run. Even looking back at, this is why it's never too late. Okay, that's the one mm-hmm. thing to say too. Mm-hmm. If you're 40 years old and you have $60,000, you think, okay, there's no way I have enough time to have any sort of money by the time I'm 65. There's just not enough time. Well, if you take a couple $100, $200, put it away till you're 65, get about 6% interest, you'll be approaching $400,000. Okay, a couple $100. Just do it. Just put a little bit away. If you move that up to 500, by the time you're 65, you're going to have near 600,000. Mm-hmm. Those are life-changing numbers. We tell our kids all the time, don't be a statistic, right? changes your future. You want your kids to have more than you do. So try to educate them to put a little money away.
Right. I think that, you know, we do that with our son. He makes a little money on the side, mowing lawns and stuff. And it is interesting. Once you break through that, hey, you need to save a little bit, and you get the eye roll and no way, and let's go to Target, you know, and get that sensation of showing them, you know, is saving and how to save and keep saving and so forth. Now it's become a easy conversation to have, and it's become, oh, yeah, right. Okay, yeah, right. I got to go put $10 in my savings. And it becomes natural. It becomes a habit. And that's, I think, building those good habits. Just like health, everything, building those that you can build on become life-changing, like you're saying. Right? And it doesn't have, like we're saying, it's incremental. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a whole new you. You don't have to be tied and be new and improved. You can just be a little bit, right?
right.
But I think everybody thinks that it has to be this huge thing or it's not ever going to be.
You have to have so much money, and that's another one as well, right? It takes a lot to make a lot. It truly doesn't. As you can see, all the numbers that we talk about all the time show you that's not true. You want to be a millionaire? Start early. Put away a little bit. We have another client that's kind of like the ideal client. They said in 3 years, we're going to work like crazy. We're going to be traveling nurses. We're going to set aside money and we're going to save as much as we can for 3 years. And once we hit this number that they had in their mind, which they were able to do, now they can cut back because all the hard work was done up front. The doubling of money, if you put aside a lot in the beginning, when we talk about the rule of 72, you make 7.2 every 10 years, your money doubles. That means 500 becomes a million becomes two becomes four. We can't get back those first years. The end is what gets cut off. You have to start early. Right. All right, you hear the music. That means we need to take a break. But going into the break, I want to save this one to you. It's another one of my favorite quotes by Philip Fisher. The stock market is filled with individuals who know the price of everything, but the value of nothing. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and Erica Much and I are all filling in for Dave Petso this weekend. Downtown's amazing right now, too. I got to keep saying it's so vibrant and alive. So if you're around, come down. Say hi to Tom. He's doing taxes. You could pop in.
Wave as you go by. I won't see you, but wave.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we're talking about the myths of investing. If you have anything you'd like to add to this or if you have questions, please call us at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. So I'm changing it up a bit. I wanted to intro into this section with a quote. The reason why is it ties into what we're talking about. Says in investing, what is comfortable is rarely profitable. Well, once you get used to investing, it's more comfortable than not investing. You almost gets to the point that it's like eating healthy, right? Once you start eating healthy, you don't feel as good if you don't eat well. If you don't exercise, you feel guilty. You have to get in these things that make you feel good. Investing is the same way. Once you start investing and you actually watch the magic of compounding, and it truly is. Sometimes you look at the numbers like the coffee man. I mean, $70,000 turns into $1.2 million. First of all, that's mind-boggling in itself, right? Mm-hmm. Second is just cutting back a little. You don't have to totally change your life to become an investor. You just have to cut back on a few things. So when you look at this and you say, all right, so people are afraid it takes a lot. We've already said it doesn't. They don't know how to get started. Fairly easy. You can call an advisor. You can talk to someone about it. You can do it online. There's a lot of ways to get started. But the other one is it's risky. Everyone feels the stock market and investing is like gambling or it's a game or
casino.
There's all these different analogies that they use for the market. But the interesting thing is it truly isn't. You just studied and did your CFP.
Right.
You went through all the details of what comprises the market and the different indices. So Eric is our newest CFP and she's had it for a couple years now. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it goes back to education. I mean, we always talk about people are afraid of what they don't know. People think it's risky. They think it's gambling. But if you just know just the bare minimum, it's not scary at all. I have to go back to my brother again. He doesn't understand it. He's sitting on cash. He's comfortable in cash. He doesn't want to invest because he can see that. Well, maybe with a little bit of background and maybe I'm not being the best, biggest older sister. I got to sit down with him and have more of a conversation. But just explaining, again, it's not that scary. You can be comfortable investing and it's not gambling.
It's not. It's actually ownerships of the great corporations of the world.
I mean, It is. And, you know, there is a reason that the U.S. has the best economy, the best, you know, the greatest, you know, been economic great thing is because it's based on capitalism. And capitalism is basically businesses trying to be best, the best, and trying to earn more than their competitors. That's the essence of our and why we've been so successful. And what we're doing is we're just taking that and saying, hey, we can make money off of this concept of investing in businesses without having to do any of the work. It's the hardest, easiest thing there is.
You know? Absolutely.
You can just say, hey, I want to invest in some great businesses because I know my buddy, he made a lot of money in this business, and you can do that, and you can invest with the Bezos and Amazon. You can invest with Google. You can invest with whoever, or people starting up a new business. This is all about, you know, what this country is based on, and that's how why it's so successful. But with that, you have things, you have volatility, you have those things, you have to pay for your profits with some volatility, and sometimes when it doesn't work out so well.
But all companies are like that. Even if you owned your own business, you're not always as profitable as you would like to be. But if you started a business and you believe in the process and you believe in what it does and the mission, right? If somebody comes in and says, I looked at your books, I don't think you're as valuable as you think you are. Do you sell your business? I'm done. I'm getting out.
Right.
Right? No. And this is the same sort of thing, right? If you're able to buy a basket of stock inside of a mutual fund or an ETF or something similar and diversify your risk that Tom's talking about by owning all these different companies, if someone on Wall Street temporarily says your company's not worth as much as it is, goes back to the price versus value, do you sell everything just because you have a temporary price reduction?
Right.
That's where it gets risky because people get so fearful of that. All right, we're going to jump to the phones real quick. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Just listening to your program, it's very interesting. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I would like to say that when I started investing, saving as a 401k 25 years ago, you know, I was just like what you said. I didn't think I had the money to, you know, that I could do it. But I started with the company match really bothered me. I thought, man, I'm missing out on free money.
Absolutely.
So I started with 1% and then, you know, I got it up to whatever I needed for the company match. And then, you know, and then once I turned, 55 or whatever, and then I maxed out what I could put in, and then I contributed the extra and above. But right. I would just like to say something that's really important to me, being very thrifty. The young lady, is her name Erica?
Yes.
Her brother, has she told her brother that he's missing out on the company match? Because even if he just puts his money market or his money in something like a money market or one of those target funds that's as far out as you can go, you know, that's not going to fluctuate. That's not going to be like stocks.
Right. And I have pointed that out to him, but their company actually doesn't match. And some companies don't provide a match. So a lot of people get in that mindset, you know, of they're not giving me anything. Why should I put anything in? I think that's a good point. Exactly what you're saying is a good point to point out. Even if you don't get a match, you should be putting at least 3%, whatever you can do, in.
Okay. Well, here's one more thing you might hit him up with, Erica. The money is tax deferred, and it's the same thing. There's got to be some like a money market or a stable value fund. And why doesn't he, you know, that's tax deferred. Why doesn't he put his money in there?
Yep. I'm trying. I'm pushing.
So, Michael, I have a question for you. When you first started your 401k, way back when, did you miss that 1%?
Well, no, I didn't, see, because I had bought a house, and it took me 9 years. And so the best thing college ever taught me was the finance class and the financial calculator and payment streams.
Yes.
And so I figured out on my house, it just killed me. I thought, man, if I go 30 years and pay this off, I'm going to lose so much money to interest.
Right.
So that was my first goal was to wipe out the house, which I did in 9.5 years,
So I wiped that out, and then I was so broke all the time. It's just the thought of the 401k, I thought, oh, I can't do it.
Right.
I've worked so hard on the house. I thought, but I've got to. And right. So I did 1%. And so then I just, it was a couple of quarters I was up to 10%. Because I thought, man, you know, I wiped the house out. Now I'm rich.
Right. Exactly. And you have all this extra money. See, you did it right. You had delayed gratification.
Right.
You did everything to stay within. I mean, you probably ate rice and beans like Ramsey mm-hmm. likes to say for a long time to get that
yeah.
house paid off.
Yes, the rice and beans diet. I yep. did that.
All right, Michael. Thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. I like it when you guys fill in.
Oh,
thanks
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you. You have
bye-bye.
A great weekend. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
All right, we're going to take our last break of this first half, second half hour, I guess. We're moving like crazy, aren't we?
Yeah, because we lost a half hour.
We did. All right, so again, please give us a call at 580-5436-580-KIDO. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown, and Erica Mutch are filling in this morning for Dave Pezzo. Please give us a call at 580-5436-580-KIDO. When we were talking before, we were kind of beating up Erica's poor little brother.
I know.
But the one thing we want to say is there's a lot of positives in what he's doing as well. Again, we said that millennials save, but they don't invest. That's not absolutely negative. That just means we need to encourage them to invest as well as save. You have to have a savings account. Another quote that's there is, how many millionaires do you know that got wealthy by investing in savings accounts? Well, a savings account isn't an investment, like Tom pointed out.
Right. Savings is savings. Investing is investing. So a lot of people get that confused because they believe that they have that thought process that buying CDs or putting money away at the bank or whatever is they're investing. And that, no, that's savings.
Mm-hmm.
And savings has a purpose in your overall financial plan, but it isn't the end result of the plan.
Right.
And I think that millennials, everybody, there's always something that you can dig at millennials for, but I
and
do
every
have to,
generation, you know, they're
true.
Just the one that's time to be picked on.
Yes,
right?
That's true. But my brother, he doesn't have any debt. He's driving an old car that it's paid off. He's saving at least, and he's not living frivolously. So, I mean, there's positives about still having some portion of cash. Would I like to see him invest a portion? Yes, but having that base so that if an emergency happens, he can put new tires on his truck or he can fix whatever brakes if there's something that needs fixing. And I think it's just important to point out the positives of it, mm-hmm. too, is having that base, that cash portion. Everybody needs to have a little bit of cash.
They do. And we were beating up on student loans, and most do if they didn't get help from parents or somehow have something set aside to pay for school. A lot of millennials, even whatever the generation is, I always get lost above them, have a lot of student loans. We've met with people that have student loans and are planning retirement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that is a big issue. But also the millennials seem to be delaying gratification more because they are building up cash. They're not buying houses immediately. Mm-hmm. They seem to drive older cars. There's a lot of positive with that, right? So we don't want to beat them up because they do a lot of things right. But we do need to get everyone educated on how important it is for compounding to invest and save. So
right.
don't spend your savings account completely,
right.
but then start investing as
right.
well. All right, Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer, Tom, Erica.
How are you?
Good morning.
Great. Hey, my question is the 401k, the Roth, the IRA have been very successful programs.
Okay.
And my question is, why can't our Social Security be part of those programs?
You know, there was a bill a while ago. They were trying to push through to have separate accounts for Social Security as well, so that your Social Security was kept separate from the pool of money. So whatever you earned, it was yours. But that was shot down very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to give up control.
Right?
It's a
control over
thing.
That fund.
Yeah.
And I think that you have people that have pretty narrow thinking. They believe in more of a pension type of thought process where, you know, any pension plan has a lot of strict investment criteria, and because they have to have this sort of plan, right? They have to be able to make those payments, and you can't have a large downturn in the market cause hey, well, we don't have the money. But the flip side of that, they don't have the money anyway. Right. It's already bankrupt. So, you would think that we could be more innovative. I agree with you. They should put more thinking into that. It is something, doing something about Social Security is something that they keep pushing down the road. And at somebody, you would think Trump would do it because what the heck?
Exactly. You know, He's taken on a lot, right?
So why not try to figure out a better way of funding that or taking care of it? Because the time will tell when they'll have to do something.
And I don't know what the end game is here, too, because if people aren't saving enough for themselves and their main source of retirement income is Social Security, but it's not able to fund it, it's a concern of what's coming up now because people are living longer and healthier, and Social Security was never really designed to last as long as life expectancy is going. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue as well.
Right. You have fewer people paying into it. Yeah, it was designed for people
are living too long.
It was designed for people to die about 68.
Yep.
The very first person received Social Security received $20,000 in benefits and paid in $246.
Right.
And so it's a system that was poorly constructed, and now it's just kind of snowballed. Medicare is even worse.
Correct. So is there any congressman or congresswoman working on such a plan that let's say it's aside from what we pay into Social Security and what we pay into Medicare? Is there any plan that people can take a chunk of their paycheck and automatically just put it into a 401k plan that would benefit them in the future?
That's what it is, the 401k plan, Roth IRAs, IRAs. There's different investment vehicles that the government has created.
Right.
I mean, they allow them to be funded. So you can save for yourself over and above Social Security.
Right.
When we do financial plans, a lot of time, Erica's our queen of financial plans. We don't even count on Social Security.
Right.
But what I'm saying is a plan that is automatically taken out and put into, just like Social Security, the government.
Oh, for savings. Right. No, they're, not that no. I know of.
And I think we'd just be starting the whole ball on Social Security over again because there's so many things you have to consider there about longevity and so forth. I think we'd just be recreating the wheel. I think that what they need to do is figure out what they're going to do with the current system that is obviously broken and fix that. I don't think having another government savings program that's mandatory is going to work out any better because government is running it. And whenever they run things, it doesn't work out so well.
Correct. Okay, well, that was my question.
All right, Ron, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. And that is a good point. People used to have pensions. A lot of companies would come away and you'd have a pension for working there a long time. Some did only invested in their pension, didn't invest inside the 401k. But you have to kind of take care of yourself.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, doing financial plans now, we don't know what's going to happen with Social Security. So we're planning for it without. So if you can take care of yourself, if you're putting that money away to provide for your future, that's kind of what you have to bank on right now. Versus not knowing what's going to happen in the future with Social Security.
Absolutely. All right. So one of the things, too, that a lot of people don't want to invest is because they feel the system is rigged for the wealthy. That if you don't have a lot of money going back to that, you're not going to be treated the same. It's so easy now with very low dollars to get into a great investment. Mm-hmm. I mean, ticket charges, which means what it costs to buy or sell something. Some are as low as $4.95 to
right.
buy a corporation and own it.
Right.
So to me, that's huge as well. When we first started, I remember ticket charges were, $70 or something like that just to buy. And then people would mark them up with commission and all this. That was when $100 went nowhere. Now $100, most of it gets invested.
Yeah. And you have Fidelity and some of these funds that are coming out with zero cost mutual funds. I mean, I'm not real familiar with those funds, but zero cost and you don't get charged anything. I don't know how they're making their money there, but it's so easy. You're right. It is so easy. It's like Everybody has the ability at their fingertips to do this. It's just getting over the hump and doing it.
Especially with technology. I mean, you can jump online, open up an account, and link your bank and just start putting money in. You don't even notice, you know, you're not missing that $20, $50, mm-hmm. whatever it might be a month.
And there are a lot of really good investment professionals out there, too, that enjoy the educational side of this. They want to teach people about how, like we're talking about, the compounding, how mm-hmm. important it is to put a few dollars away. Erica sits down with, I think, a 15-year-old
yep,
this week?
I did.
And walked her through compounding, explained to her the coffee illustration. I think the numbers are so large sometimes that this doesn't even make sense to me. But if you can just make them comprehend small equals a lot later, first job, put 10% mm-hmm. away. Mm-hmm. Tom talks to his daughter Ellie about that. I talk to my kids about that. Just put something away from every paycheck. And if you don't know what you're doing, call an investment professional. They may not be able to set up an account for you. They may not be able to work with you because of limits or whatever it might be. But good financial advisors want to educate.
Right.
But also that leads to, just because they put themselves out there as financial advisors, do your background. There are some people that sell products only. So if you sit down and they shove a product across the table and said, this thing answers everything for you, maybe they're not right.
It's kind of like now with Google reviews or Amazon, you can review a product right away. A lot of people do their research and read, okay, well, before I buy this water cup, this water mug, I want to read all of these things about how it performs. Well, do the same thing with your advisors or who you're going to as a professional. Know what they do, how they work, fees. I mean, just doing your research. It's so easy. It's now still all at your fingertips.
There's a lot of times where we've been in several meetings where it'll be someone that this is their first time they've ever met with an advisor. And I go, and they go, okay, what do I do now? And I go out and meet with other advisors. Mm-hmm. Yep. Go and shop around. And I hope you come back because if you come back, then you must have done something right. Mm-hmm. And also because this is a huge decision. You don't want to do it more than once mm-hmm. or several times. So take your time, get that gut feel that you can trust somebody because this is all on trust. And if you can get somebody that you can trust with helping you with your money, that's a big relationship that should last the rest of your life, you mm-hmm. would hope.
And even if you trust them, please still go on to FINRA's website and do a search. SEC also has a site where we put up our what's called a Form ADV. It's basically a resume on the firm. And each of us have our own as well, which is our background. It talks about our experiences, how long we've been in the business, everything, mm-hmm. what we've done for a living prior to becoming a financial advisor. And the most important thing is complaints are listed on there. Read them, though. Some of them are, read them, just read them. Yeah. They're very interesting what's disclosed, believe me. So yeah. Take the time to read them. Don't just see, oh, they've got disclosures. Read what they are.
Yep.
All right. All right. We're going to take our last break of the hour, I believe. Then when we come back, we're going to keep talking about myths of investing, but we do want phone calls, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone, Tom Brown, and Erica Much, all certified financial planners with Petso Financial. Thank you, Dave, for letting us fill in. It's always really fun. We are going to jump right to the phones. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
We are good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I have a question when it comes to my investing in dividends specifically.
Okay.
I'm 55 years old, retired military, so I have a pension for the rest of my life.
Thank you for your service.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for your support.
Absolutely.
When it comes to my investing, I've got some mutual funds going. I got a couple ETFs. I got money in CDs, so I'm kind of split across a couple different spectrums of the market. But everything that I'm doing when it comes to my investing, I'm always thinking about dividends. How much money I'm going to make in dividends going with this instrument versus, you know, some other instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So all things being equal, let's say that one instrument I'm getting, you know, over 10 years, about 7%. And the other one I'm getting maybe, 7 or 8%. How much weight should I be placing, I guess would be a good word, when it comes to monitoring my dividend income?
Mm-hmm. One thing we look at is if the fund or the investment is paying over what the average is, sometimes there's more risk. So we look at this when we're analyzing things and we say, what risk are we getting for the higher dividend? 7 to 8%, slightly higher than the averages that we're seeing out there right now. So you have to make sure you know what you own, of course, which it sounds like you do. But we believe we lean towards dividends too. But from a diversified portfolio, we also like growth side. I mean, your Googles, your Amazon, those type of companies that don't pay you to own them. But our first thing is we do overweight getting paid for owning, especially in the income phase. If you're taking income, you got to have those dividends.
Be careful of, just like Jennifer was saying, look under the hood a little bit of what you're investing in. There's a lot of telecom companies that pay a high dividend yield, but you're not the investment that you're the company you're investing in might not have a lot of investment potential. So just buying the dividend, just to buy a high dividend, can get you a little skewed in areas of the market that might not be as profitable long term as far as overall performance.
And I think you were kind of asking what percentage of your portfolio to put in those dividend paying companies. And that's different for every person. It depends on what your goals are, if you are drawing income or if you're more in the growth phase, like Jennifer mentioned.
Okay, great. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a great weekend.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. One of the questions we get asked a lot is, how much money do I need for retirement? Used to be the magic number was $1 million, and you think if you hit $1 million, you're set, you don't need to save anymore. But what we found is $1 million may be too much for some and not anywhere near enough for others. Part of it is, are you out of debt? Do you have a pension? Do you not live crazily high on the hog that maybe, you know, going camping's good enough? Or do you want to travel the world? So backing into the number is something that doing a financial plan helps you to do.
Right. So always start with, instead of the amount of savings, start with what your needs. What is your income needs going to be? And start there and then back into your number. And I find a lot of times that people, you know, given certain other income streams, maybe a pension, maybe Social Security, if they're closer to Social Security, that they don't need $1 million. You know, $500,000, $600,000 is going to be enough. I had somebody in yesterday, far from $1 million, and she was thinking she had work till 65, and I convinced her, looking at the numbers, she could retire in a year and a half at 63. Needless to say, she was doing backflips after when she left. But so I think, like you're saying, I think we get these things in our head that, oh, this is what it has to be, and not really understanding that maybe not.
And I think that a lot of people in retirement say, well, my house is going to be paid off. I won't have this debt or that, student loans are gone. And so I need a lot less than what I'm spending now. But people forget about the healthcare costs, or that you're not going to be working anymore, so you have more free time. You do want to go travel. You want to see grandkids, whatever it might be. So a lot of the times what you're spending while you're working is pretty similar to what you are in retirement. They just are allocated to different buckets.
And the cost of healthcare prior to Medicaid age is huge. The number, people say, how can it be $1,000? We actually had somebody that felt that she was doing really well, kept her income low, but she went over the limit for the exchange that she was on. So she sits down to do her taxes and has an enormous tax bill. People don't know that that really can happen. We see it all the time, and it's $1 over and it's done.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, the Obamacare subsidized insurance can really bite you if you're not paying attention to that income. And really, if you are contemplating that or doing that insurance, really understand how that income works, because it is all your income. It isn't just earned income. And I think that
dividends,
there's a lot of misconceptions about that, or IRA distributions.
Yes.
That's a big one that I've personally seen that really has got a couple people.
So just know what you've got. So when you sit down to do those, because it is a shock. And basically what it is you're just paying what you would have paid if you weren't on the exchange. So it's not technically a penalty, I guess, but it's an enormous number.
Yeah. I've seen over $10,000 owed back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had a client call and say that it saved him over $18,000 just because he took a loss on one investment.
Mm-hmm.
He would have paid $18,000. That's huge.
Yeah.
All right. You hear the music. That means we are done for another week. We'll probably be here again in a few months, but we do enjoy our time. If you have questions during the week, feel free to call our office. Any of us would be happy to talk to you. Otherwise, we will see or hear with you in a couple months. Thank you guys for joining me.
Yeah, and Carol, I'll be at the office at 10:30. So
waiting for his tax appointment. All right, you guys have a wonderful weekend.